CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney's services as outstanding and excellent. The SAP Business by Design solution is a single integrated business management solution that delivers the best of SAP software on demand, offering the benefits of larger applications without the need for a costly IT infrastructure. And Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We're sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
And I am very excited to have an expert in the field of treasury and foreign currencies, more specifically on CFO Radio today. We have Mark Wendling. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Mark, I'm going to give a little bit of a recap of your background just so that the audience can tell what it is that you've done in your past and to act as a little bit of a backdrop. Mark is the founder and managing partner of Bannockburn Securities LLC. Previously, Mark spent 16 years as a managing director of capital markets trading at Fifth Third Bancorp, where he managed various aspects of their foreign exchange business, assisting clients with a variety of currency-related issues. Mark is a CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst, and graduated from the University of Dayton in Dayton, Ohio, with an emphasis on economics and finance, and with a distinction of summa cum laude. Well, Mark, again, thank you to the show. I'm going to start at the beginning. Let's start maybe even at the newspaper round. What was your first paying job? And give us a little bit of a jump and a skip as to how that journey led to where you are today.
Well, they're sort of interrelated. When I was in high school, a girl that I was actually dating, her father owned his own brokerage company. So I got very interested in markets, equity markets and fixed income markets, initially by speaking with him and then working with him over several summers, just sort of learning the business and how they manage clients and pick investments and sort of the allocation that certain clients would have at certain stages of their life. And that turned into an interest in college and studying finance and economics, and turned into my first job at Fifth Third in the currency department.
Wow, I wonder, does she know that that led you to where you are today?
She does. We're still in contact and touch, and she knows that her dad had a lot to do with putting me on the path where I am now.
That's fabulous. So I must say, I expected you to say that you were the leader organizing the lemonade stand at 4 years old or something.
No, unfortunately, I'm not that diverse. I've been pretty specific all the way back to high school.
Funnily enough, I hear that the lemonade stand doesn't make that much money. It's not going to make you the millionaire, huh?
It does not pay as well, what I understand.
Well, jumping forward to the role that you had at Fifth Third Bancorp, obviously one of the largest financial institutions, certainly in the United States, they themselves have gone through a morphing and evolution, I guess, as most of the financial markets have. Talk to us a little bit about the ways in which at that point in your career you were helping clients, because many of our listeners may not specifically have worked in the currency markets. So perhaps if you could give us a little bit of a background as to what you did and how that manifests itself from the client perspective.
Sure. When I started at Fifth Third, it was, I guess, what can be described as a very large community bank, if you will, maybe about $15 billion in assets. The commercial department of the bank, which foreign exchange was a part of, had very few foreign exchange customers or really any sort of corporations that would have a need to do foreign exchange. And as the bank began to grow, as our acquisitions brought us into new markets, and as the bank grew from $15 billion to $115 billion, the corporations that we dealt with became more global in their reach, whether they were buying product, raw materials from different countries whether they had different customers in different countries that were paying them in a variety of currencies, whether they were acquiring businesses and plants in different countries where they were expanding their businesses, or if they were selling plants and businesses and being paid for those businesses in other currencies. As the bank began to grow, we saw a very rapid increase in the need for foreign exchange transactions, for hedging services, and for the international department, we saw very rapid growth there.
What is the, perhaps, again, for purposes of education, what is the most basic currency exchange transaction that a firm such as yourself would typically do? And then maybe you can give us an example of some of the more complex ones.
That's a good question. I mean, the most basic transaction is paying a bill. So if you can imagine a controller or a treasurer or a payables clerk that has a payable that's not in a U.S. dollar on their desk, and they have to go into the market and, let's say, purchase euros. Let's say they have an attorney that they've hired in Germany to do whatever sort of work, and they owe them 3,800 euros. They actually need to go into the market and do a foreign exchange trade to pay that bill, even though they may not realize that they're doing a currency trade. They may think that they're just, quote-unquote, paying a bill. That's probably the most typical transaction that we do as a client that actually has to send money to fulfill some sort of obligation, a payable, if you will. So that would be the most basic, rudimentary type transaction. Something more intricate may be a client that has Canadian dollar receivables that they've got coming in on a daily basis, and they've got U.S. dollar payables, and they have to sort of match the Canadian to the U.S. dollar to make sure that the movements in the currencies aren't causing their margins to fluctuate a great deal, or that they're not causing their cost structures to fluctuate a great deal, because it has a dramatic impact on earnings. So we run the spectrum of seeing very simple payables that have to be paid up to more intricate hedging type structures in various currencies and amounts that people have to actually enter into to help control the risks that they have in their business.
And Mark, what time period do you typically see people are trading maybe on those hedges? In today's foreign economic time, do you see a shorter-term view, or do you see still that longer-term view?
It's a good question. It depends on the goals of the company and trying to match up terms of hedges with specific goals that they may have internally. So a particular client may have a deal that they know is more of a one-off transaction that will be over with in 6 weeks. They may want to just hedge that particular transaction 100%. And you may look at a company that has an ongoing operation in another country, such as Brazil, and they need to keep revaluing that asset back into their financial statements. And they may want to smooth those fluctuations out of their financials, especially if it's a public company. And they may take a longer-term view on the sort of hedge that they want to put on. So it really depends on what the goals are internally.
Understand. And from your perspective, what are the specific complexities that you have of working in what I will loosely describe as the trading markets, but specifically that of currency and exchange?
I think the volatility today is much, much greater than when I started in the business 16, 17 years ago. What used to take 6 to 12 months as an adjustment in a currency today can happen in a number of days. So with the increase in hedge funds in the market, and what I might call more hot money that's in the market chasing return, the volatility creates a lot of issues for clients if they're unhedged, and volatility creates a lot of problems and issues for clients if they are hedged. If they hedge 1 week forward for a certain amount of euros or a certain amount of Canadian, and we get a 15% swing within a number of days or weeks, you know, the volatility can really create a lot of problems. So I would say the number one thing that we've seen as a change, and it's much more difficult to manage today, is the volatility that's in the market.
And do you have any particular aspects of the elements of the economy as it impacts those foreign exchange and volatility, maybe in terms of where we are today? Is there anything specifically for the short and the long-term horizon for those foreign exchange markets? Is it oil prices? Is it interest rates? Is it labor turnover? Or is it something other?
It's a good question. I mean, I would probably term the foreign exchange market as a serial monogamist, if you will. It sort of focuses on one thing at a time. If you look at Europe, for example, 6 to 9 months ago with the problems that started in Greece, with the debt that they have, their inability to pay that debt and some austerity measures that were forced upon them, the euro was hit very hard to the extent that a lot of people thought it may disband, that the Germans may want to go back to the German mark, and that the currency may no longer be in existence. And you fast forward to today, a lot of the same issues are taking place in Europe in terms of Portugal and possibly even Spain. Continue to talk about Greece restructuring their debt, but the euro is very strong because the market is more focused on what the European Central Bank is going to do in terms of interest rates. The number one thing that dictates a currency's strength relative to another currency, so the euro versus the U.S. dollar in this instance, is what interest rates are doing and the expectations of that interest rate moving going forward. So the European Central Bank today has forecast to the market and actually raised interest rates a week ago that interest rates are going to move higher as they are looking to fight inflation, while the Fed, on the other side of the fence, has said we're going to keep things very easy and loose from a monetary policy perspective. So we've seen the euro, even in the face of Greek interest rates being at 20%, be very strong and actually today crossed over 146 this morning.
And what is the impact for that in terms of the U.S. dollar?
In terms of the U.S. dollar, it has its own set of issues, I guess, if you look broadly across all currencies. The U.S. dollar index is reaching new lows week to week and month to month over the past few months recently. The trade deficits that we have in the United States are very large. The imbalance, the budget deficits that we have are very large. I'm sure a lot of the listeners have seen the in the newspaper lately, the Republicans and the Democrats arguing about how to reduce the deficits. And long-term deficits usually have an impact on a currency, on weakening it going forward. So I think the view in the marketplace is that the U.S. dollar is probably one that will get weaker over time versus stronger.
And that leads me to a question perhaps for the CFO looking internally at what I might loosely refer to the cost of finance, or the cost of funding businesses abroad and those international foreign transactions. As you look at the CFO and your role today is still very much helping that CFO in the financial, balancing the financial aspects of the business, how highly does that CFO rank foreign currency and its impact on the bottom line? Is there a particular lesson learned for the new CFO or the person coming up in the ranks in that treasury finance function?
I think it's a great question. And what I've seen in my experience is that if a company is very new to the international markets, it may not be something that is that important. It's not a focus. But with the continuation of time, the international business becomes much more important to CFOs as their companies get into new markets, new emerging markets, as they, like I had mentioned earlier at the start of the program, if they are buying companies, we see that quite a bit, that a company that had never had any sort of currency issue before all of a sudden buys a plant in Mexico, and they've got a whole slew of currency issues that they never had to think about before. So I think it's something that increases for a CFO the longer that they're in that seat.
Now, when you describe that situation, Mark, explain to the listeners when you talk about now they've got some foreign currency issues, what specifically do you mean by issues? Do you mean that they've at the last minute had to go make those trades and purchases and they've got a bad price, or is it something more than that?
It could be a number of things. In terms of acquisition, let's say it was a Canadian company that they're purchasing, and they started these discussions February 1st. And the exchange rate February 1st was 1.05 Canadian to the U.S. dollar. And as time went on, they've got a price that they have agreed to, and then they look at the exchange rate, and the exchange rate is 0.98. So over that period of time, those 7 cents in terms of exchange rate difference has made that acquisition that much more expensive because it wasn't hedged. And it might not have been hedged because they weren't sure if the acquisition was actually going to come through or not. So it may cause them to have to go back to the selling company and recalculate the price due to the movement of the exchange rate. So that's one example. Another example might be labor costs. If they purchased a plant in Mexico and they're paying their employees in Mexican pesos, if they began that process with the U.S. dollar being at 14 Mexican per dollar, that would be a very cheap source of labor. If the exchange rate strengthened down to 9 Mexican per U.S. dollar, that would create a much more expensive source of labor just through the movement of the exchange rate. So a lot of different sorts of risks that they could back up against, depending on the situation, always coming back to the volatility in the exchange rate causing the issue.
Understand. And is there a particular aspect of perhaps in that instance, the CFO may be finding out after the fact that there should have been some early planning?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's something that we try to do at Bannockburn is to really get involved in what the issues are in terms of the currencies that they're dealing with, what the acquisitions that they may be doing in the future, what they have on their plate today, and giving them a range of options. So we could say, listen, you go unhedged, here's what can happen, A, B, and C. If you hedge part of your risks, here's what it may look like on the other side if you enter into these transactions. Or if you'd like to hedge 100% of your risk, we can put some structure in place where you know exactly what your U.S. dollar side is going to look like through a variety of options and sort of give them a choice so they can see maybe on a dry board on our proposal that if they do A, B, and C in terms of the hedge, they can actually see what the impact will be on their business over time.
Understand. And very often my experience has shown that operational day-to-day activities tend to be forefront of mind and typically better planned, but it's things like the payroll tax deposit, or it might be the additional tax payment that you have to pay to the equivalent local government, equivalent to the IRS. Those are the kinds of things that very often are forgotten to be hedged.
You're exactly right. I mean, today most people are focusing on the here and now, the bills to be paid, the product needs to be shipped. Do we have the customers? Are we keeping the clients happy? Are we meeting our sales? We've got the auditors in. So all those things sort of take time from the controllers and the treasurers and the CFOs. And we truly try to be the FTE that maybe they can't hire to be that person that's always there to support and to make them aware of the risks that they have that they might not have otherwise have time to look at.
Sure. Now, that perhaps takes me to there's an element of routine that takes place in the treasury function that we're referring to. Has the foreign currency aspect of this treasury function now become routine? Or is the volatility that you're referring to, does it make it be quite dramatic at times?
I think it really depends on the experience of the CFO or the financial person that's looking at the currency issues. We certainly have a lot of clients in our business that they're very experienced, they're very knowledgeable, they watch the euro hour to hour, they're constantly checking in with us to see what the market is doing, what our views are. They're very on top of what their risks are. And then you've got other CFOs or treasurers that may get something that's brand new to them, and they need a lot of education. I mean, we've heard questions all the way from what currency do they use in Poland. They're not sure if it's the euro, if it's the Polish zloty. Questions that rudimentary to, you know, we've got a hedge that we had on with another bank that we need to take the net present value of and discount it and exit. So depending on sort of the experience of that controller or CFO, range of issues, range of experiences will, you know, sort of create different outcomes and different needs for each client.
Understand. And in that regard, that also creates the urgency and the timing. I would imagine you get a couple of calls that are somewhat panicked and people need to do things pretty urgently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you might see something like the employment number comes out on 8:30, the first Friday of every month. And as I'm sure you know, Lorraine, that's a very important number in the markets. Mm-hmm. And if that's away from expectations, things start jumping and then the lights start blinking on the phones of people that need to buy or sell currencies, and invariably half of those callers are very happy and half of them are a little upset.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Well, in that regard, are there any specific aspects of your learnings that you might like to suggest? Perhaps, and I'm saying this more from an educational perspective, there may be several listeners today that perhaps haven't been introduced on a first-hand basis to the Treasury function. What about it excites you? What perhaps can you leave for the person who may potentially be interested in looking at this field?
I think the number one thing in terms of gaining a familiarity with foreign exchange is reading as much as you can. I mean, certainly the financial press, currency, especially today, even today specifically on CNBC, they probably spent a good 2 to 3 hours just talking about the U.S. dollar. So I think from a knowledge perspective and learning, reading the Wall Street Journal, reading the Financial Times, watching CNBC, following different currencies in the paper and really seeing, okay, if one moves from day to day, why did it move? And that's one thing we did with new employees at Fifth Third, and we do with new partners at Bannockburn that are maybe out of school. We say, listen, if a currency is moving from day to day, be able to tell a client or really be able to understand why it moved up or down. It's very important to know that, you know, if an interest rate moved in one country relative to another, that currency probably got stronger, or if a number came out that was beyond expectations or a little bit beneath expectations, that's going to have an impact on a certain currency. So just sort of understanding why something moves from day to day is probably the best way to gain sort of a larger view understanding of foreign exchange.
Understand. And in regards to that person understanding the foreign exchange and the process, let's talk a little bit about some of the mechanics of how this is done. Is it the old-fashioned pick up the phone, call Mark? Is it a system that's streamlined? Does it differ depending on which company that you're purchasing the exchange and the currency from? Explain to us some of the mechanics.
That's a great question. There's a lot of different ways to perform an FX trade. There's the old-fashioned way, which you had mentioned, which is simply picking up the phone and arranging a transaction, whether it's for an immediate payment or wire or for a forward. We always prefer that because we like talking to our clients. But there's also many electronic platforms that are available where a client can log on to a system and get the exact same pricing, regardless of product, that they would get over the telephone. So that's also another option. We also have clients that they like to send faxes, they like to send email files. So really it's all shapes and forms. However the client wants to perform an FX, there's a way to do so.
Interesting. And what do you recommend to that first-time trader, if you will, or first-time purchaser of the currency? How do they get to know an organization such as yourself?
That's also a good question. In terms of what we offer to our clients is more personalized approach, I would say, for non-Fortune 100-type customers. It all depends on what the client is interested in. If they want someone that's very hands-on, that's going to come out, meet with them, be available on a moment's notice to maybe explain to them why a currency moved or explain to them what's available in terms of a hedging product, if you're not a Toyota or a P&G or a Home Depot, somebody down in your neck of the woods, they might not have the availability to someone with the experience that we might have at Bannockburn. Our sweet spot, if you will, is going out and talking to those 10 to 15 million to $400 to $500 million companies that need a little bit more handholding than some of the larger guys.
Understand. Well, in the last couple of minutes of our show, Mark, certainly we've been able to dig through some of the basics and then some of the more intermediary aspects of foreign currency and so forth. But we have a tradition on the show, and before you leave, I'd like to put you on the spot. The tradition is for us to ask the CFO tip of the month. From the aspect of where you view the world in currency markets, what is your typical, what would be your CFO tip of the month?
Well, I think a good tip today would be to buy Canadian dollars or buy Australian dollars. I think that would be a very good tip for the listeners if they're looking for something a little bit different to do with their cash, would be to put something in a currency that's very commodity-based. And I think that would be, if anyone picks up anything today, I think that would be a good spot for them to look.
That sounds good. Maybe they should also go have a vacation or a holiday in those spots too.
Yeah, you could go to Australia yourself and pick up some Australian dollars in person.
Well, that is a great tip. Thank you very much, Mark. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. And I'd like to ask you to hold tight as we do our following thanks to our contributors and sponsors. I'd like to formally thank Mark Wendling, our guest today, for sharing his innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO as it is impacted by foreign currency trading. And thanks also goes to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, please go to DelaneyLLC.com. Thanks goes to SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small and medium-sized companies. For more information, please go to SAP.com/SME. And last but not least, Financial Executive International, the preeminent association for CFOs and financial executives. Their website can be found at financialexecutives.org. This and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO and would like to be a guest on the show or know of someone who may be a good guest on the show, please contact us via the web. Thanks for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.